Good evening and welcome to Amplify, a telephone talk show that looks at life from a religious perspective. I'm Father Ron Lengwin, hoping that you have felt the warmth of God's love in your life this day, but especially the joy you experience when you share that love, God's love, with others. I'd like to begin our program, as we do each week, with a story that is based on faith and formed with imagination. Jesus stood by an olive tree. He looked up at it, and you could see he was pleased because the leaves were beginning to ripen along with the olives. Soon they would be pressed into oil. His eyes then went to the sky. He was not aware of a young man nearby who was watching him intently. Peter said to that young man, "Why do you stare so much at the Master?" The young man looked deeply into Peter's eyes and answered, "You are an old man. Soon you will pass from this world. But I am young, and I wish to drink deeply from this man's words, for I see great wisdom in him." Peter was a little angry because he could not write. He turned away, walked a few steps, then turned back in anger and said, "I may not be able to write, but that does not mean I cannot remember. The years may be upon me, but my mind is still good." Then he turned and slowly walked away. It was John who asked Peter, "What troubles you?" Peter said nothing, but just pointed back at the young man. Jesus turned toward the young man and said, "The olives will soon be ripe and pressed into oil. Many will be happy for the oil that will be shared among the women. Some will even be taken to other places." The young man replied, "Master, I followed you now for many months. I see that you have great love and appreciation for all of nature and for man. I have seen you being kind to the old and the young, to the blind and the crippled, even to the animals, giving them water and grain. And yet, you are a simple man, and your words are so simple," Jesus said. The man smiled and said, "Yes, so simple. And yet I feel drawn to you, and I remember each and every word so that I may record them and others may hear their wisdom and simplicity." Jesus smiled again and said, "You are not the first nor the last to write the words I have spoken. But I tell you this, I take not these words for myself. They are words from my Father, given to inspire, to give comfort, and yes, so that one may grow in love of the Father, so that this love may be a binding force, never to be broken." A story of faith and imagination. Our guest this evening writes in her book titled, "Make My Life Simple," subtitled, "Bringing Peace to Heart and Home." The greatest gift you can give yourself in the spiritual life is learning to make it personal. It's important to recognize and proclaim your love for Jesus. It's equally, if not more important, for you to embrace his love for you. That love heals and comforts and clarifies. It brings wisdom and joy and puts everything else into perspective. God's love for you gives you grace and peace. It helps you make sense of your life, your worth, and existence in this space and time. It is your sanity. We can say grand, glorious, theoretical things, but if it doesn't feel personal, what's the point? Now, I'm not saying the spiritual experience needs to be some giant ball of emotion. Some people enjoy the mountaintop experience. I sure do. But that's not the point of spirituality. In fact, the real growth comes from those seasons where God doesn't necessarily feel very close, but we still embrace his peace and joy. But God's plan for us isn't that he would always feel far from us. He wants us to know that he is with us. In order to get in the habit of knowing this, we have to spend time with him. In the same way as friendship grows when two people spend time together, so our relationship with God is built and strengthened when we spend time with him. Those words and our guests this evening are the words of Rachel Balducci. She and her husband Paul have 5 strapping sons and 1 precious daughter. Rachel is a newspaper columnist for the Southern Cross and blogs at testosteronehome.net. She is a co-host of The Gist, a talk show for women on Catholic TV, and the author of How Do You Tuck in a Superhero? And Other Delightful Mysteries of Raising Boys. In a former life, Rachel was a newspaper reporter, and she has a master's in journalism from the University of Georgia. These days, she writes about faith, family, and get this, and we'll explain it, how keeping her bathroom clean will make her a saint. Rachel Balducci, welcome to Amplify.
Thank you so much for having me.
I love your book because I think it shows the relationship between the very practical in life and even the spiritual. All of life, I think, was designed by God to be joined so that one aspect of life relates to another aspect, and we can learn about one aspect of life from another aspect of life. And I think that's what you, from my perspective in reading your book, maybe you didn't intend to do that, but I see how it shows this important relationship between the practical and the spiritual. Tell us about your own life. When you write at the beginning, when so many things in your personal life changed in such a short time, how is it that you were affected?
Well, thank you so much, Father, for picking up on that, because that is exactly what I set out to do with this book. You know, thinking about that relationship between our practical life as human beings, you know, and God sent his son, Jesus, and he became human. And so a big part of, you know, his existence on earth was like doing the human thing and seeing how that draws us closer to Jesus. So I think about that a lot. The book starts out for me at a time when life was changing a lot, as you mentioned, and I had already begun to write the book, and I had this idea for a book all about how being super organized was going to help you do everything that you wanted to do. And I was already sort of starting to work through that. And then, our first 4 boys were born in 5 years. And so, you know, that made life really crazy in the early days. And then fast forward now, as they're teenagers, they're going to do things like graduate from high school really fast as well. And so what had happened is our oldest graduated, and I just struggled for several years with that, mostly because it was such a change to go from all 6 of my babies, you know, my little birdies in the nest, and then he left, and I had to deal with the fact that, you know, we still were a family. I still was a mom, even though, you know, it looked different because not all of us were doing everything together. And then my second son, a year and a half, then 2 years later, my second son graduated. And it just threw me for a loop. And I had decided around that time that I was going to teach at the school that my kids go to. They go to a mostly Catholic, but it is Christian school, K-12. And so I decided to sort of volunteer teach full time because my kids were getting bigger and I had all this time. And so the book starts out in this place where all of a sudden I had hit this wall where I had begun to say yes to so many things, and I was struggling emotionally with changes in the family. And I think maybe I was trying to fill that space with doing lots at the school, being in charge of the yearbook, teaching 4 classes, doing staff meetings and car line, all while trying to be a mama to, you know, kids that are, even though they're not in the home anymore, they still need you a lot. And we still have 2 in elementary, and my husband's an attorney with his own practice. And so I was a woman that just had way too much going on. And so that's where the book starts, is kind of me working through the fact that even though I might be somebody who's really organized and has a great system for all these things, that's no replacement for real peace, and which is paying attention to what God is asking of me, not what I think I want to be doing.
And you're right, life was at the outer edge of peace with no room for taking a breath. There was no joy. You were a bundle of anxiety and exhaustion. As you just said, you knew God didn't want you to live that way. And then the light bulb moment came when God told her, saying yes to me doesn't mean saying yes to everything. What do you think he meant by that?
Well, you know, Father, I think it's so easy to think that we have to do the things in life that are good things, you know, and, you know, it's kind of like, well, of course I'm going to say yes to being on this committee at church because it builds the life of the church. And, you know, if we're making decisions just because it's a good thing, we can get into some really dangerous territory. And for me, I was saying yes to everything that I saw as good. And a lot of opportunities were coming my way. And so it's, I saw myself as somebody who, you know, I have this master's in journalism. So it would be good for me to volunteer as a writing teacher and to be helping with the yearbook. And, you know, these were all wonderful things. I mean, none of them were quote unquote selfish things, but that was the problem is I was, I think I was just making decisions not based on what I thought God wanted me to do or what I could handle, you know, in light of my primary vocation as being a wife and a mom, but mostly just looking at each, you know, opportunity or each request for my time at face value. Well, this is a good thing, so I'll say yes to this, and this is a good thing. Right. You know, and God finally really kind of getting my attention and saying, "You, no, I don't want you to do this, to say yes to every single thing." Because what I started to realize, too, is I think you get a little bit of a false sense of, well, it's pride. Like, well, if I don't do it, who will do it? Mm-hmm. You know, so maybe a false sense of obligation that's kind of wrapped up in pride a little bit, you know, but also that's such a terrible distraction when maybe what I'm really supposed to be doing is having the time and energy to be emotionally available to my 17-year-old son or to my 19-year-old son, you know, and we think in terms of, yeah, but they don't need dinners prepared for them necessarily or lunches made and they're independent. But if I'm so exhausted at the end of every day that I have nothing left to give my family, then my, you know, and that's exactly where I was. And so what had happened is my sense of obligation was distorted and I was having to give more time and energy to things outside the home than to the people that, that nobody else could be there for in the same way, which is my husband and my children.
Mm-hmm. You acknowledge that saying no is certainly a difficult situation and also acknowledge that we need women to bring their light, wisdom, and spirit to the world, especially when we begin to talk about order. How can order bring peace?
It's order brings peace, and it's not simply a matter of, and I start to dive into this in the book, and that's why I am grateful for the things that happened to me around the time when I was working on the book, because order is, you know, there's practical order, and then there's this much more theoretical, which is the practical order of running a household, running a schedule, you know, looking at the units of your day and making sure things are managed nicely. You know, I'm aware of, you know, what we have going on tonight for each of the children or what meetings my husband and I might have or, you know, that sense of order, being aware of, you know, how many gallons of milk do we have left? That's a big thing with a lot of boys, you know, keeping track of our food, that brings order too. We're not always running out of food. But, and I had that working very well. But what had happened for me is that distortion of the overall sense of order, which is the balance between, among all the things that you're doing. And so you have peace. Peace comes from that order in managing a home, in managing a schedule, but then the bigger picture of order is, you know, are the things I'm doing in the right order? Do I have, you know, time and energy for personal prayer? Do I have time and energy to spend with my children? You know, am I paying attention to what God is asking of me and not what I feel like I want to be doing? Now, of course, God, you know, he doesn't come and fill in the words in my calendar. You know, he doesn't tell me what I'm going to be doing on Monday and Tuesday. But that's the problem when things are out of order, is if we're moving so fast that we can't even hear what we think maybe God is gently trying to tell us, then we don't really have a sense of moving throughout our day, sort of being aware of the direction that God might want us to go. So that's the kind of order that ultimately, you know, is much more important than the ability to stay on top of the laundry and keep your bathroom clean. But those things are also important, because when we take care of those kind of things in our life, it really brings us the peace to slow down enough to hear God's voice and, you know, hear the bigger picture of the direction that he's asking us to go.
Yes, you're right, that order is keeping our priorities straight, understanding what God has asked you to do, and then doing it, giving the proper amount of attention to what truly matters. And a little reflection in your book points out that a mother with small children should not put pressure on herself to have a prayer life that looks like a nun living in the cloister. Of course not. And that the first step in identifying your priorities and directing your energy is identifying your priorities and directing your energy accordingly. And when you're talking about order, you even go so far as to say that we need order in our relationship with God, but we should not mistake the fact that order and simplicity are not the equivalent of perfection, and that people have different levels of stress that they can tolerate. And so we need to make decisions, you write, based on prayer and common sense and not what other people are able to do. And so we all have to set limits, and healthy limits. We have just about a minute for our first break. How do we know that God cares?
Because he loves us and he made us. And then when we have things working in order, I think we can really sense that. When we're operating not at our outer limits, but we can really settle ourselves a little bit, we have an opportunity to experience his love, because we're aware of the world around us and we're not running around like a hamster on a wheel all the time.
You write, and I'll read us out to our first break. Peace isn't only about feeling good about the stuff I'm doing or following my passions, though your passions are important. Peace comes from acknowledging that Jesus has a specific purpose for my life, and that he will give me the grace, wisdom, and time to get it all done. Peace comes from always asking God to be at the center of what I'm doing, and asking God if what I'm doing is what he wants me to do. When we start finding that life feels exhausting, or that we are always or angry or sick, it's time to consider all the things we have going on and figure out what needs to change. That's called limits, my friend. They are there to keep us sane. So we're going to take this break, and then we'll be back with our discussion with Rachel Balducci. Welcome back to Amplify, where our guest this evening is Rachel Balducci. We're talking about our book, Make My Life Simple, Bringing Peace to Heart and Home. During the first part of our program, we were talking about order and how order can bring peace to the family, and that order is keeping our priorities straight. It's doing what God wants us to do. We need to identify those priorities and direct our energy toward them. And we're not talking about perfection, but talking about what it is that God wants us to do in such simple ways. The way I'm approaching the program is there's a large part, about half the book, is about order, peace, bringing peace and order into your home, and a lot of practical recommendations. We're going to talk about some of those so that we can get to the end of the book and bring in the whole part about spirituality, the third part of the book that talks about peace and order in our spiritual growth, Jesus, others, and you. Whenever Rachel, you, in part one of your book, is titled Practical Peace, Order Within the Home, you write, an ordered life is one that gives each task the attention it deserves. This means that small tasks should get a small amount of our attention. When our lives feel out of order, we start to have an imbalance in where we put our energy. I have felt firsthand the stress that comes from the details of life being out of balance. Give us an example of what you mean there from your own life.
So I think we can all relate to that, you know, instance where we go to load up in the car and we can't find our car keys. And, you know, I had that very thing happen years ago when I was taking my boys to, I think it was a Holy Day of Obligation, and I went to load us up into the Suburban, and I couldn't find the keys. Well, one of the little hands had moved them and put them in the fridge. So, of course, that was not the first, second, or even the 10th place that I looked for the keys. So it took me a long time to find the keys. You know, that was one of those sort of life with little kids, things get moved. But that's the level of disorder that I'm talking about. You know, you go to make lunches for your kids and you've run out of bread or you're out of detergent. And those are all honest mistakes that happen from time to time. But when you're living at a pace where you really never have time to slow down to take stock, to, you know, to really keep track of what you need, that's when that kind of disorder and chaos and frenzy is what dictates your day instead of really doing the things that you actually need to do.
Tell us about the concept, the word season. It's one of your favorites, and how it fits into what we're talking about tonight.
Yes, I use that word a lot, and I try not to use it too much in the book, but I think it's so important to really be aware of that, you know, and that's for all of us. I was going to say for me as a mom, but I think everyone should be aware of the season that they're in, and that's, you know, something that's bigger than simply this year, because it could apply to a few weeks. It could apply to several months. I think it's easy for moms to understand this concept because life with children, you know, you have seasons. You have a newborn season where that's just a uniquely beautiful and very stressful time. And so you have to treat yourself with a lot more love and patience, you know, and maybe lower standards in some certain areas to get through that season. As the mom of five boys, and my husband helps coach basketball. Basketball season is a season where, you know, I'm not going to maybe be trying to make really elaborate meals for us as a family because we're at the gym, you know, three or four nights a week. Mm-hmm. So that's what I talk about with seasons, is just being aware of the different variables that you have going on and then applying, you know, like adjusting your schedule, your standards, your expectations so that you're not stressing yourself out or driving yourself crazy trying to make something happen in a time where that's just not a realistic thing to do. And I think especially, I talk about it with prayer as well. You know, I think women, we see motherhood as a vocation, the special call from God for our lives. And so we take it very seriously and we want to do good and be holy people. But we can't hold ourselves to the same standard of prayer as a missionary of charity, one of, you know, Mother Teresa's nuns or a priest. And we have to remember that God knows that about us. Like the special call that each person has in their life gets to tie in with all the different ways that they move towards being closer to God. God, you know, we get to keep that into account and work within those confines.
And so the concept of season then can apply to all the kinds of times that we experience in our life. And you write that we have to work hard to get order and peace, but it's totally worth it, that if you want peace, you must be willing to make the changes necessary to find it. It's not about pursuing perfection, as we said during the first part, and that God will give us the gifts we need. And one of the first chapters in this section is titled Homemaking/Household Management, as we talk about the outrageously practical. And I love the quote that you use from J.R. Miller: a true home is one of the most sacred of places. Far more than we know, do the strength and beauty of our lives depend upon the home in which we dwell. Could really think and reflect on that for quite a period of time. And you point out that it's okay not to have everything perfect all of the time. We are human with human suffering, and we must be careful that we don't allow cleanliness to become an idol. And that's part of what you've explained now. So where should we start? And what I'm looking forward to is, because I love the example, the Navy SEAL training. If you want to change the world, start off by making your bed. So where should we start?
So we're going to talk a little bit practically right now instead of theoretically. I'm a huge believer in that concept, and I love the book that became so popular, you know, about making your bed by that Navy SEAL. I start in the home when I'm cleaning. I start with a clean sink. And when I get up every day, I start with a made bed. And it really is, and I talk about it in the book, this concept of you're starting, you know, from sort of ground zero and working your way out. And in theory, you'll make the bed and then you'll pick up the laundry that's on the floor and you'll sort of move through even just 10 or 15 minutes of sort of getting the day started in the direction of order and, you know, all the different systems working. And then worst case scenario, it's one of those horrible days where everything goes wrong. Well, at least you have your bed made, you know?
Right.
So it's that feeling of a thing already being done. And that gets you moving in the right direction instead of feeling like you're just behind from the get-go.
And to read a little more about the importance of your bed. If you make your bed every morning, you will have accomplished the first task of the day. It will give you a small sense of pride. It will encourage you to do another task and another and another. And by the end of the day, the one task completed will have turned into many tasks completed. Making your bed will also reinforce the fact that little things in life matter. If you can't do the little things right, you will never be able to do the big things right. And so if you want to change the world, start off by making your bed. And that's where the Navy SEALs begin. You have to be in making your bed. And so that's where it begins. The next step in practical organization is the focus on keeping the room clean. But in the midst of that, you have a family blitz. Tell us about the family blitz.
So this is something that my husband and I started years ago when our guys were all little. And it was this feeling of like, you know, you want to train your children, but you also don't want it to be super painful. And you want to be able to have your standards for cleanliness. And also for me, you know, it's like we have this whole family and the house, you know, gets lived in and used, and then everybody goes to bed. And sometimes what that means is the mom is left. She looks up from getting the last child tucked in with the help of the dad or however you break down, you know, those nightly tasks, and the house is trashed. And so what we started to do was the 20-minute blitz, we would call it. So before bedtime, you know, maybe before showers or maybe after showers, I mean, we would literally even set a timer and try to see how quickly we could get things picked up and, you know, kind of break it down. Either everybody's tackling one room or you have different people in different rooms, and you just sort of train the kids to move through. This is our standard. You know, it's like any leftover trash, any dishes, we know right where those go. We know that the pillows are going to look this way. You know, maybe we're not vacuuming, maybe we are, but that it's a finite amount of time, which kids do so well with that. You know, it's not this open-ended thing. It's like, this is how long it's going to take. And usually it takes less time than this. And we're all working together. And then when we're done, the job is totally done. And it's really effective because I think it helps kind of get this concept of like, work is a thing we can all do together. It doesn't just fall to the mom or just to the dad. And that it makes our home a great place. And, you know, you as a child are a part of making our home a nice place to be, which is such an important concept for them to get.
And you're right. I'm a big believer in helping my children keep their rooms clean. I don't mean I'm always in there cleaning up for them, but in the training stages, it's important for them not only to hear that they need to clean their room, but also see how it can be done. And so you're a teacher at the same time. And you have a quote from Aristotle, good habits formed at youth make all the difference. And you reflect that quote is on your fridge, a reminder for me as much as for my children. We have to let them do the work because they need to learn. Do the hard thing now. Your kids or their spouses will thank you for it later.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
So I think that what can be tricky about this part of things is I am somebody that tends to kind of, I have the way I like it done and it's easier for me to just do it. So I do struggle, and probably because I had five sons in a row. It's amazing now that I have this daughter at the end, how much more sort of intuitive she is. And I'm not bashing guys at all because I just love my son so much. But the level of training that was required with them and continues to be required is just a little bit different with my daughter. So I can see where probably when I had this pack of boys that were little, it, you know, it's tempting to just kind of let them do their thing and I do the business of the house stuff, you know. But what I found to work with boys and with my daughter as well is that I don't just say, go do this, because then it's just like, well, what does that even mean? When I say go clean your room, do I want something wiped down? Do I expect all the stuffed animals put away? You know, so I think with children, it's so important to train them. You know, in general, I'm tidying their room and they learn this is the standard. Now, I don't like don't throw their stuff away or get rid of things unless it's something I can tell that hasn't been touched in a long time. But, you know, I help them kind of see what the standard of a good cleanly room is. And then when it's out of that order, they're able to go in there and do the picking up. And sometimes with help from me, you know, depending on the level of mess and then how old the child is, you know, kind of dictates how much help I'm going to be giving them. But I just think that's important training. And it's not this sort of nebulous unknown, you know, I'm overwhelmed because she said clean the room and I have no idea what that means. It's like, no, it's a real finite, very short list of things you have to do.
Giving the gift of hospitality is another form of order that can bring peace into our life. And you start that chapter by writing, hospitality moves us away from a focus on ourselves and toward a focus on others. This is an important factor in peace and order. A big part of searching for peace is a desire to hear God's voice and to do what he needs us to do. Being God's hands and feet means loving those around us. And it's not enough to be nice to the person at the grocery store. We need to be open to ministering to others the generous acts of hospitality and love. Tell us more about giving the gift of hospitality.
I love the idea of hospitality because I think, and as I work through the book, we're slowly ascending, I think, from this real practical inward focus look at order and peace, and slowly moving up towards the more, you know, the spiritual and the loftiness and being close to God. And so I think hospitality is sort of a nice move as we bridge towards that, almost like an airplane moving towards takeoff, because hospitality costs us something. I personally get a little bit stressed out, you know, when I have people over for dinner. I'm one of those people, you know, that like Irma Bombeck used to say, like, don't wait until, you know, everything's perfect and all the silverware matches because you'll never have anybody over. But I have matching silverware, but, you know, it's like a million other things that you can look around your home and just say, oh, I'm not worthy to have, you know, to have people over here. The front door needs to be repainted, just ridiculous things. But what it means to have someone into your home, to me, I really see as like theology of the body, that gift of self, where we are welcoming someone in, we're building community because, you know, when you have someone into your home, you can't always hide your crazy the way you can just saying hello to someone as you leave Mass every Sunday. And that's so good because it breaks down our isolation. You know, it helps people see, I'm not alone. You know, this person isn't perfect either. And God's, you know, loving me on the journey in the same way he's loving this person on the journey. So I put hospitality in there because I think it's just so necessary in the life of the church that we learn to quit thinking about ourselves so much and, you know, use some of our time and energy to welcome others into our home, to, you know, feed the hungry, those corporal works of mercy, to feed the hungry. It's just so necessary and good.
And some of the examples you give are have company over for dinner, host a shower, host an overnight guest, handle the holidays. This is coming quickly. Handle the holidays with peace and be hospitable to yourself. What do you mean by being hospitable to yourself?
You know, being kind to yourself. Self-care is a big, important concept right now. But being hospitable to yourself is also just a really practical thing. Like, having space in your home that is peaceful for you. Maybe making sure your bedroom isn't the resting ground for every random article that doesn't have a place, you know, like that you've created a space in your home that helps you sort of reboot and, you know, rest is just very important. And, you know, with all of these things too, I included them in the book because I know we all know the importance of those things, but like I said, I think it's easy to convince yourself that now's not a good time to do those things. So it was kind of like a look at why it's so important and then how easy it is to do it if you sort of streamline. And that's a big part of, you know, obviously make my life simple. Just the concept of so many things, if you kind of pare it down and have a real simplified approach to it, you can do so many more things than looking at all of these different things as some epic, you know, I talk about this with like hosting family for the holidays or, you know, if you're in charge of the big family gathering, I'm the oldest of 8 children. Now we're all, you know, getting older with families of our own. And so when I go to host an event though, what I write about in the book is I never want to be a martyr and say, I'm hosting, I have to do everything. No one can help me and it has to be perfect. You know, no, it's more important to me that I'm able to have joy and kindness and love for the people coming into my home. And I've done this the wrong way. And so I've learned from this. I'm a better host when I have allowed myself to say, I can't do it all. I shouldn't even try. And, you know, I'm going to ask other people to bring things so that because it's way more important for me that when guests come into my home, I am in a state of peace and I have joy to offer instead of the most perfect side dish. You know, like let somebody else bring the rolls. Let somebody else bring a side dish. Maybe all you have to do is have a home that's picked up and ready for all that food to come in. You know, it's okay to say, this is what it's going to take for me to make this work peacefully. And again, there's a little bit of humility tied into that. You know, I'm not perfect. I can't do it all. But I would rather do less with a lot of joy and let everybody else pitch in as well. I just think it's really important to keep that in mind and, you know, allow yourself to operate like that.
Peace through organization. You write about we need a place for everything, that you have to be honest with the amount of time and energy you're willing to invest. The heart of a successful organization is to divide and to conquer. And the first step is a willingness to declutter. We're going to take this step and then we'll be right back. Welcome back to Amplify, second hour of the program, where our guest is Rachel Balducci. She's written a book titled Make My Life Simple, Bringing Peace to Heart and Home. A couple examples she's given that we haven't talked about, that we'll come back if we have some time towards the end of the program, is that it's all about order. Bringing peace to heart and home is about order, and it's about simplicity. And she writes about having peace about your body, and the means of, talks about she writes, I've gone through seasons where taking care of myself was too easy to put off because who has the time, the money, or the patience? Talks about going shopping, her experience of shopping bulimia. Shopping helps practically and emotionally. Fall in love with exercise, eat healthy. And she writes about having peace in your mind. Be not afraid. Go out with good friends. Choose joy. Get over yourself. Be imperfect. Dying alone. And where I'd like to pick up in the book is where she writes about having peace in your spirit and heart. And then we're going to move from there to part three, which is about peace and order in our spiritual growth, Jesus, others, and you. And so, Rachel, tell us a little bit about having peace in your spirit and in your heart. You write that what is your spirit? John 4:23 describes the spirit as the part of each of us that connects with God. And so we need one peace in our spirit and heart. We need to simplify within us that space that searches for God, that wants unity with Him. An important part of finding peace in our spirit is knowing at the very core of our being how much we are loved by our Creator. And we begin to trust not only that he cares for us, but that he has a great plan for us. And then this quote from Jeremiah, "For I know well the plans I have in mind for you, Oracle of the Lord, plans for your welfare and not for woe, so as to give you a future of hope." So when we get to the practical, tell us about loving yourself and being a saint.
Yeah, so peace in your spirit, and that's starting to move to a look, you know, looking within, and that knowledge and that peace that comes from your connection with your Heavenly Father, you know, the King of the universe who loves you so much. And one of the ways that we really can begin to experience that kind of peace and knowing God's love for us, receiving His love, and to me, I found this on my journey in this, is to start to really know and believe, one, that God knew what He was doing when He created you. You know, that call to be a saint, we each have that call. And ultimately, what that means is simply saying yes to the thing that God is asking us to do. And that kind of goes back to, well, how do you know what He's asking you to do? Well, you learn to tune into that. But as a part of moving towards that ability to hear what it is that God's asking of you, is really knowing that He doesn't make mistakes, so that when He made you, He knew what He was doing. So there's nothing about your personality that's keeping you from being a saint, other than, you know, we all have the gonk and the original sin and then our own laziness and stuff. But for me, and I write about this in the book, that as a teenager and even in my 20s, I spent a lot of time thinking, misunderstanding that, you know, the personality God gave me, He wanted me to use that to glorify Him versus looking at it as a thing that was keeping me from Him. And of course, again, we all sin and we have part, you know, we all have our different struggles. I think certain people struggle more with certain things. But I had spent a lot of time sort of thinking, I'm too loud, I ask too many questions, I'm, you know, this and that. And I had this this idea that the saints were the really quiet people that never messed up. And, you know, and so for me, learning to understand that the call to be a saint, like, we all have that same ability, and it just boils down to our willingness to say yes to Jesus and to have Him at the center of all we do, there's so much freedom and joy from that, because you learn to love yourself more. And, you know, and that might sound flaky to some people. I don't need to love myself. I need to love God. But if we're walking around focusing on, or with some understanding that somehow, you know, we're this horrible person, then that, you know, that reflects poorly on our, mm-hmm. on our opinion of God, because God made us. And then in a similar vein, the call in our life. And so to recognize that the thing you're doing in your life right now is the thing God is asking you to do. And it gives you such a sense of purpose and mission to go through your day. And I love that, because that works for the mother of a young baby. This is the thing God's asking me to do now. And it works for the empty nester, or it works for the person that was never called to be married, you know, or the widow. And it's seeing each thing we're doing as the thing God has put in our life to draw us closer to Him, which to me really just makes life such an adventure, because everything we do is something that God has asked us to do, you know, from the mundane, wiping a snotty nose, to something really glorious. You know, all of those things are opportunities to become saints, which is such a beautiful thing.
Your next recommendation is love your life. You have this quote from Mark Twain: "The two most important days in your life are the day you are born and the day you find out why." And you write, the first step in loving your life is recognizing that it's a vocation, a sacred call from God that is part of your sanctification. And you have this wonderful quote from Catherine Doherty about the duty of the moment, learning to embrace it. Tell us a little bit about the duty of the moment.
Yes, I just love this. A friend of mine she died last year, my friend, and she had spent a lot of time going up to the Madonna house and told me about Catherine Doherty. But it's really this concept of recognizing that the thing that we're doing in this moment is the thing God has asked us to do. And I loved it, because that concept came to me at a time when what I was doing was barely not drowning. You know, I was just barely not drowning in life because I had four boys that were, you know, middle, like elementary and up. And then I had two little babies. You know, Isabel and Henry were like 3 years apart. And then the other boys were 8, 10, like 11 and 13. And so life just was very difficult for me then. And all of a sudden I was like, I just saw this as like, but this is the thing God is asking of me right now. And what that means is not anything more than just, I'm going to try to get through the end of today in one piece and to try to find some happiness and joy in the midst of it, but to recognize that this is the most important thing I'm doing, is taking care of these children. And that God, you know, my quest to be a saint or to be a holy woman isn't on hold until my kids are bigger and I can go to adoration longer and go to daily mass. No, like the thing I'm doing right now is part of what's drawing me closer to being a saint. And that's the duty of the moment, which just, you know, it makes those really difficult moments something more than just a thing to endure. It's like, no, God is with me here in the midst of all of this craziness too.
And people are tuning in and saying, what are they talking about tonight? I think it's this paragraph that will explain that. Don't forget the practical part of peace, doing the things that bring us peace, pursuing order in our home, finding peace within ourselves, and taking care of those areas that need our attention bring us peace, which helps us love our life even more. Be determined to love your life, which also means being willing to address the parts of it that can be changed. Let's jump to part three for the amount of time we have left. Peace and order in our spiritual growth, Jesus, others, and you. Give us kind of an overview before we talk about your specific recommendations.
Sure. So, you know, as I considered the ways that I feel closer to God and in the ways that, you know, we grow in our spiritual life, it really is in these three different areas. I mean, we have our relationship with Jesus, you know, our connection with Jesus, but then how we deal with others is a huge part of that, of personal holiness. Because, you know, how many times have we had that experience? I have it often, where I feel so close to God and I feel like I could be a saint, and then I walk out my front door and I have to encounter somebody that rubs me the wrong way, or all of a sudden I realize, oh, I'm not as patient as I thought today. We grow so much in holiness in how we deal with other people, and we learn to die to ourselves, you know, and to put other people first. And then, you know, then the personal aspect of things, of just learning to personally experience God's love. And the book kind of ends right where it begins, which is finding order in our home, in personally, mentally, taking care of the things we need to take care of, frees us up to have order in our life to then experience God's love, so that we're not running around so crazy. And again, like you've stressed, and I appreciate it so much, this is not about perfection. This is not like, here's a book of how to make your house clean enough so that you can have a good prayer time so that you can be a saint. But it's really just the peace. You know, I liken it a lot to the times where if I'm exercising, then I just feel good about myself. And it's not that all of a sudden, you know, by going out for a run, I feel like if I have a few pounds to lose, that I instantly lose it. But it's that feeling of like, I've made an effort in the right way, and I can rest assured that I have taken care of that for today. You know, and then I don't have to fret about feeling gross because I put this effort into it. And I think little bits of effort across the board in all the right areas really get us moving in the right direction.
And your first recommendation is spend time in prayer, and you write that the greatest gift you can give yourself in the spiritual life is learning to make it personal. It's important to recognize and proclaim your love for Jesus. It's equally, if not more important, for you to embrace his love for you. And you point out that even folding laundry can be for you a prayer time, isn't it?
It is. That really is, in my home, the place that I feel closest to God. And it's, you know, this whole funny little thing where I have this certain way that I, you know, I take the laundry out of the dryer, so I'm always folding it when it's warm, and I have a system so that it's not stressful for me. I have little baskets for each of my kids. And so, you know, that little bit of order creates this peace, and I'm able to just, you know, I go in my room, in the laundry room, and I fold the things. And, you know, sometimes I just really pray for each, you know, whatever article of clothing I'm folding, I pray for that person. And then sometimes I really do just have this experience of like just knowing how much God loves me. And I think it's because I'm kind of in this really calming, doing this calming little task and kind of tuning everything else out. And it's not like this every time for sure, but it is a place that I have just found, you know, that I really do experience God's love, which is at just at the heart, you know, of the desire to be a saint is like when we know how much God loves us, that makes all of this other stuff so much easier, you know, like to go about our mm-hmm. day because we know God loves us and we've experienced that and the ability to love others, which to me is like just so huge, the call to love God's people. Like he needs us to be his hands and feet to not just to do things, like not just to be his hands and feet, but to be his eyes and his heart to love people. And so, yes, it's very important to go to the soup kitchen, you know, and to do volunteer work, but really just to move throughout our day, seeing people the way God sees them and loving him in the way he loves them so that others can really experience that love of God as well.
Two other ways in which we share of your wisdom within this context is have peace with God, learn to trust, and pursue holiness. Tell us a little bit about those efforts.
You know, I think it's just like making this commitment to be holy, which means, you know, and that's not simply a matter of just saying I'm going to spend X amount of time in prayer, because, you know, I have found so much peace in my life recognizing that, you know, God is also aware of the seasons that we're in. And so he doesn't just say, you know, the only people that can pursue holiness or be saints are the people that are hitting this much daily mass and this much adoration. You know, it's like we use the circumstances of our life to draw us closer to God, and he uses them to draw us closer to him, which means, you know, that we are pursuing holiness within our marriage, within the way we treat other people. You know, I talk about marriage and just that's such a huge way, you know, to die to yourself and become closer to God. It's when we start to take the focus off of ourselves and to look more at other people and their needs, as, you know, our kids, our spouse, our neighbors, the stranger in the grocery store. That to me is pursuing holiness as well. It's just like, and I know it sounds weird because so much of the book is focusing on, you know, these things in our life, but the point of it is really, when we focus on these things, when I think about a menu and the laundry system and keeping my home clean, and I've given things the order that they deserve, then I really don't have to think about it so much. And Right. Then that really frees me up to think about myself less, ironically.
Yes, no question about it. And in spirituality and others, you have a quote from Bishop Robert Barron that the point of prayer, he says, is not to stay on the mountain. It's not to cling to the mystical experience, however wonderful. It is to become radiant with the divine light so as to share it with the world. And then when your wisdom is then love your spouse, cultivate community, help your family pray. Amplify on that for a little bit.
Yeah, you know, that's a big point. And I hear over the years, you know, I write at my blog, testosterhome.net, and then I'm a columnist for our newspaper here in the Diocese of Savannah down in Georgia. And I'll hear from women especially who want to know how to make family prayer work. And I think it's such an easy way for us to get tripped up. And I write about this in the book. You know, when I began to discover contemplative prayer, and it was so life, it was transformative for me. And I thought, well, as I need to make sure my kids experience this too, because, you know, it took me 40 years to find this and I don't want them to have to wait that long. So, you know, meanwhile, I've got like a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old and then a 10, 12, 14, and 16-year-old. And so I haul, five of whom are boys, haul them into the front room one day, light candles, set a crucifix, you know, on a little altar type thing. And I want everybody to just kneel and stare at candles for 15 or 20 minutes. And it was a disaster, as you might imagine, like a pack of boys in front of candles and fire. And, you know, and I was so disappointed because it didn't just work the way I wanted. You know, like we have to train our family in prayer, but the most important way to do that, yes, there's the rosary and there's, you know, we need to teach our kids intercession and Thanksgiving and, you know, all of that. But just to live our lives, our faith life at the level of real, the real freedom that comes from giving everything to God, letting go of everything and just giving it to Him, that's the level of prayer life that we need to let our kids see. You know, for me, I can talk till I'm blue in the face, but if I'm living a life of real joy and freedom, that's going to speak so much more to my kids than just marking something off of the list. So, you know, it's an interesting two-step.
Right. I need to get in. This is going to be our final break, and we'll come back and speak with Rachel Balducci about Make My Life Simple, Bringing Peace to Heart and Home. Welcome back to the final segment of Amplify with Rachel Balducci, talking about her book, Make My Life Simple, Bringing Peace to Heart and Home. And we're going to end the program speaking about the last chapter and also the conclusion, which is about spirituality and you. And she writes at the beginning of this chapter, being at peace with other people requires being at peace with yourself, within yourself, with where you are and where you are going. You have to have peace within before you can be okay with people around you. We talked about the spiritual life and the components of Jesus, the heart of the matter, and others, where we grow a lot. And now let's talk about ourselves. Spirituality in you means spiritual self-care. It means taking all of the other areas, the place in order and learning to let go and simplifying and letting them impact us in a positive, personal way. And she writes, the book ends with this topic, but really, this is where the simple life begins. Why is that, Rachel?
So it's really just being in touch with where you're at. And, you know, and again, it kind of ties back in with the duty of the moment of recognizing where you're at, what it is you're up to, you know, what you're doing right now, and applying, you know, the right ways of doing all of that, embracing the season you're in so that, you know, you recognize that you can pursue holiness and the desire to be a saint because God takes into account where you're at in life and who you are. And a big thing, I write about this too, not just sort of the season you're in, but all the different components of you and your life. And I tell a funny story in there about a friend of mine who's a homeschooling mom. And at the time she had 4 girls and I had 4 boys and she wanted to make tilmas in honor of Juan Diego becoming a saint because my mother-in-law is from Mexico and, you know, it'd just be a special thing for us. And we arrived and the Balducci boys wanted no part of, you know, drawing a lady on a t-shirt with flowers. And I was mortified because I thought that that somehow was like a direct reflection of my failure as a mother, you know, that I had not raised these boys to want to do this the way her daughters did, because, you know, they recognize the beauty of Mary and Mary is the queen. And, you know, and just really learning to recognize that, God, I think sometimes we take ourselves way more seriously than God does. And I was beating myself up the whole time we were there and, you know, so angry at my sons for not wanting to do this thing. And it wasn't until I just recognized it's okay, you know, and that's part of growing in holiness too, is just embracing not just the season we're in, but, you know, the makeup of our family. And I've learned so many lessons of having 5 sons. And, you know, we really, by the time we had our 5th son, I really never expected that we would have a daughter. And I had totally made peace with that, but learning all of that too, like life with boys is just so different than sort of what I thought motherhood would look like with calm collected children. And that doesn't limit me from pursuing holiness either. You know, just because I'm not somebody who necessarily, when my kids were little, could go spend tons of time in the Adoration Chapel, God takes all of those things into account. And so we really do have to learn to love ourselves and learn to love our life and see it all as a gift from God.
Get out of that funk. What are you recommending to us here?
So I tell a funny story in this section. It's right at the end of the book. And basically it kind of goes back to the very beginning of the book, which was I started to know that something was wrong with me and my life being out of order and out of balance when I went for my annual checkup to the doctor and my blood pressure was so high that the nurse kind of made a funny face, you know, like, whoa. And I thought I was totally fine. I just, you know, but I was starting to see. And what happened is I left that doctor's appointment with a prescription for medication that I had not asked for. And so the doctor kind of saw in me, he was probably one of the first people to recognize that I was sort of living, you know, on the outer edge. And the point of talking about getting out of the funk is really recognizing when you're at a place in life where even if you have all the right things in order and you're doing things the right way, quote unquote, you know, you've streamlined, you've learned to say no, you're taking care of your family and you're still struggling, find the help that you need. You know, for me, what I was able to do is I walked away from a job that I loved because mm-hmm. it was taking way more from me than I could. But I also know that, you know, postpartum depression is a thing that you shouldn't just try to pray away. Like, get the support you need. You might not need medication, but you might, and that's okay too. And really that part of the book addresses, you know, really the caveat of this isn't about perfection. This isn't about, like, if you learn to put everything in the right order, you won't have any problems. There's still going to be times when even if you've streamlined and cut out the fat and you're, you know, you're doing all the things in a real simplified way, that you might need, you know, real good support from friends in a unique way in that season, or maybe take some meds. You know, I have a friend who's a family practice doctor, and he said, you know, we live at a pace in our life right now that is just beyond the way we were made to live. And some people kind of might need, you know, help with that. And that's not a bad thing to be able to acknowledge, you know, the pace of life that human beings live at now is just so much faster than what we were originally created to do.
And so you're right. What's beneficial about a simple life is that when something is out of order, you can assess it. When you have identified the disorder and adjusted things, you will have peace. And when you have identified the disorder but are not in a position to change or adjust, you can do something about that as well. Tell us a little bit then about your recommendation. Don't be a martyr. Be yourself.
Yeah, you know, at the heart of all of this is just learning to let go. And I share this story that I read in a book on prayer by Henry Nguyen. And he talks about an old woman who comes into the hospital and she's flailing about and they have to take everything away from her that she's holding. And the last thing she has left is this coin in her hand and it's balled up so tight that they finally have to pry it out of her hand, you know, and she feels like if they take this away, she will have lost everything. And how ridiculous that sounds, you know, in the story, this little coin, but how many of us walk around like holding on that tightly to something, you know, either our opinions, our viewpoints, our fears, our hopes and dreams. And we hold so tight onto some things that we're not able to connect with God the way that we need to. And so it all ties in together with like the simplicity of home, the simplicity of heart, and then the simplicity of just our view of like being willing to say, Lord, the things that I hold on to so tightly, you know, my fears for my children, my fears of what people think of me, my opinions, that I'm willing to let go of all of those things. Because then what we are left with is open hands that are free to be filled by God, you know. And I think Mother Teresa says that, you know, God, he fills emptiness. He can't fill something that is already full. And so much of this is just the letting go and the pouring out of ourselves so that God can fill us up and help us to be the saints that we were created to be.
And so the challenge you write is not only to forgive yourself for all the ways you've sinned, but to finally let go of your ideas, your hurts, to open your hands and give those things to God. What kind of process is that, giving those things to God?
You know, it goes back, I think, to that friendship relationship with God. That's really, you become somebody that's spending enough time with this, you know, this entity, this person, that you start to trust that he has your best interests at heart. And little by little, I think it's like when we have time where we see that we're clinging to things, that we're fearful, that we're, you know, we have unkind thoughts, that we just give those back to him. And I kind of practically, I write about this in an earlier section of the book about choosing joy. And it's this concept you hear about, choose joy. You know, and one day I was really sort of agitated and it just kind of in an agitated state and having real negative thoughts. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to choose joy. And every time I have a negative thought, I'm going to like almost serve it back to God the way a Wimbledon tennis player would return a serve. And so I'd have a negative thought and I would just hand it back. You know, mentally, I saw myself handing this thing to God. And I think that's the same kind of way that letting go is when we see ways of thinking, ways of relating that we know are keeping us from feeling God, you know, being close to God or from doing what he wants us to do, that we just say, I don't even know how this works, God, but I'm giving this to you. Even the act of just acknowledging, I want to give this to you. I want to open my hands. I don't want to cling to anything more than you, that God really can do something miraculous for us.
And so the most humble thing you write we can do is accept our weakness and love ourselves and our own imperfections, and also acknowledge the need for hope. When you write that all things in our life, our spouse, our kids, the people we love, are gifts from God, but they cannot be what brings us peace and joy and fulfillment, that must be the space that we are willing to pour out so that God may fill it with himself. In that fullness, we find true peace and true happiness. So hope is the confident expectation of a coming good. If our hope is rooted in our kids in our present situation, then life is going to be very hard. You can't put your joy on hold while your kids get through a difficult season. Our well-being can't be a lack of difficulty. And this is a lesson you learned from your friend and spiritual director, Bev.
Yes. Yeah, and I think that's especially true, you know, as our children grow and get older. And, you know, I recognize I'm in this in-between stage with some of my kids where they're in college. So, you know, they're no longer in my home where I'm like controlling the comings and goings, but they also haven't sort of, you know, launched, as we say. They're just sort of figuring themselves out. And so I found that with my oldest, you know, he left and went away to college and he's figuring his life out. And it was the first time where it was like that total lack of control. And I found myself really with these clenched fists, like I can't relax until I know exactly what he's going to do in his life. You know, and I see that he's in a good place with he and God. And you can't live that way. You know, as your kids get older, you just can't live that way. And so that was such an important learning lesson for me, is like real peace. It doesn't come from being in a place in life where everything's perfect, you know, where everybody's in a good place and everybody's healthy. You know, the peace that God has to offer really can exist outside of those circumstances in our life.
You have this quote from Teresa of Calcutta in the conclusion of the book: the fruit of silence is prayer. The fruit of prayer is faith. The fruit of faith is love. The fruit of love is service. The fruit of service is peace. And then as you end the book, you write, and it gets into this whole comparison, I think, between Mary and Martha. And Martha is said to have chosen, Jesus has said, the chosen part. I think he meant only at that particular point. But you write that keeping your bathroom clean can make you a saint. It's weird, and it's true. All of these things, the moving parts of the abundant life, are meant to bring us closer to Jesus. Caring for my home, my domestic church, is the thing God is asking of me now. So I clean and cook and organize and streamline. I focus on my health and my relationships, on my prayer life, and my mental well-being. And I think that's what Martha was doing. Our guest this evening has been Rachel Balducci. The title of the book is Make My Life Simple. Rachel, thank you so very much for being with us and bringing up to us a deeper understanding of how important the ordinary is, how important then structure in our life is in order to bring about peace, order and peace. Thank you, and bless you. Bless you and your family.
Thank you, Father. God bless you. Thanks for having me.
All right, you're welcome. Bye now. So we come to the end of the program, and what I'd like to do is close with still another quote from the book, where she writes, "To pursue holiness is to let go of restlessness. It is unclenching a fist that clings so tightly to the things we think will bring us happiness. True adventure comes from telling God he can have his way with us. This is simplicity at its finest. It's giving its all to God and holding on to nothing." And then this quote from Bishop Robert Barron, "God is nothing but love, straight through. And therefore the life of friendship with him, in the richest sense, is a life of total love, self-giving love. The spiritual life at the highest pitch is about giving your life away." And then Rachel continues, "Here is the heart of adventure, the heart of adventure in Christ, of recognizing him in our hopes and dreams, in our hunger and thirst. Pursuing holiness is simply recognizing that God is within every single part of who we want to be, what we want to do, in our yearning to be the best version of ourselves and do something fabulously great with our life. Holiness is rooted in simplicity, recognizing that all the complicated strings of emotions and feelings can be redirected to God. It's remembering that we are made for God, to know him, to love him, and to serve him. This doesn't mean we will do less with our life, but so much more." Don't forget then how precious life is and how powerful love is. Tell someone now that you love him or her. Pray for peace as if it depended on you alone. And come back next Sunday and amplify with us.